Taking a look now at the aesthetics and environmental impacts of wind energy projects. Michael Vickerman is our guest, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin. And Michael, you wrote a column, and welcome to the program, by the way. Thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
You wrote a column earlier this month and asked, what is it about living within sight of large wind turbines that spooks certain people to the point of being irrational about it? And I found it a very interesting article. You kind of get a little frustrated with people.
We certainly are. We haven't seen a completed wind project for the last 7 years, although the good news is there are three wind projects now under construction. Two of them should be finished within 3 months, and they are considerably larger than the largest project currently operating, which is in southwest Wisconsin. Nevertheless, even though that the Public Service Commission has approved these projects and they're going forward and they are supported by the town and county governments there, there are other towns and counties where this has become a very divisive, polarizing issue. And I chose the word rational or irrational carefully because in reviewing all of the trade-offs, if you will, the weighing the pros and cons of living with wind versus living with other things out there, considering the fact that wind is a non-depleting and clean energy resource, and considering that the typical wind turbine will be far enough away so that it wouldn't impose any changes or hardships to a neighboring residence, the opposition just strikes me as you have to ask the question, so what is the rational basis for their opposition? Is it physical impacts? No. There are projects going up all over the country, all over the world. The United States had a record year for new wind installations from one coast to the other. Another record-breaking year is expected in 2008. So what is it? And the more I thought about it, the more it occurred to me that people are really objecting to a change in their landscape. It is really, at bottom, an aesthetic issue. And it's actually an old reaction. I think what we're seeing now is not much different than what Miguel de Cervantes wrote about in Don Quixote, where to one observer or to one a neighbor, these turbines are sleek, elegant, efficient. To somebody else, they appear like monsters.
Yeah. Well, Ron, in Trempealeau County, and Trempealeau County, by the way, is one of the counties we'll be talking about, so I'm glad to hear from Ron. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I might have an answer to your question, but I think, first of all, I would like to raise a question. If the program is about why people are so upset about the wind turbines, why is your guest a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist for the wind energy industry in the state? And my comment is that this aesthetic issue that Mr. Vickerman is talking about is essentially a red herring. The objections to wind energy is not about the appearance of these things. There are dozens of issues with these things, and all the way from the environmental impacts, the political implications, the health impacts, the local control of where they're going to be sited, the overruling of local zoning ordinances to have these things shoved down the throats of people in the state, the fact that they're being put in a state where the wind is not adequate to even make an efficient use of the wind, and there are other areas in the country where this would be true. There are so many issues with this thing, and everybody wants to make this sound like it's all about nobody wants to look at them.
All right, well, let's give Michael Vickerman a chance to comment. There are quite a few things there to talk about, Michael.
Probably to last the entire program there. You heard a laundry list of complaints about wind generation. Let's start with the fact that we have wind projects operating in Wisconsin and that and under no circumstances has there been detected any violation of a permit or a hospitalization, no linkage to illness, no linkage to an accident to a resident nearby. The turbines that are operating now have been in place for generally 8 years, and they have a very good safety record. Now, the physical impact can be controlled through setback distances, and we recommend 1,000-foot setbacks. Now, there are many instances in this state of people living in proximity to power generation. It's very commonplace in Madison. This studio where I'm speaking is about 1,100 feet from a coal-fired plant that produces hot water for the UW campus and a little bit of electricity. And within 1,000 feet, you'll find classroom buildings, you'll find a bicycle path, you'll find student housing, and life goes on. The area is in no way blighted, in no way suffering because of its proximity to an essential part of the infrastructure. The caller also mentioned, or I should say disparaged, the wind resource in Wisconsin. The fact is that the cost of generating wind in Wisconsin is comparable to using either coal or natural gas. And wind has a further advantage because once you pay for the generating equipment and all the ancillary equipment, because the fuel is free, you fix the price of that source of energy. You cannot say the same thing about either coal or natural gas. Yes, the wind does blow a little harder in North Dakota than it does here, but unfortunately, North Dakota lacks transmission facilities to ship the electricity out from the state. All of the transmission lines there are fully committed to other energy sources. So we can wait 10 years for North Dakota and the region to get its act together, or we can start building wind projects closer to where the load centers are, and they are profitable enterprises, and they have virtually no effect on electric rates.
And Trempealeau County, as a matter of fact, runs from Trempealeau County, actually has an ordinance that they adopted in December, I believe, regarding wind turbines, which you want to comment on that?
Yes. All the wind industry asks for is to be regulated like any other power producer, like coal, like natural gas. Trempealeau County has adopted an ordinance that imposes a setback of 1 mile from between a turbine and a house or a church or a school or a place of business. Now, if that law or if that ordinance were applied to coal plants, we would have to move the state capital a half a mile because the state capital is about a half a mile away from a Madison Gas and Electric coal plant. Furthermore, when you look at the distribution of houses and businesses in Trempealeau County, it is impossible to find land that is within or farther than 1 mile from any of the so-called sensitive receptors that a turbine has to be placed at least a mile from. So, in effect, Trempealeau County has banned commercial wind generation. And the basis for doing that is not public health and safety, although they claim otherwise. It is effectively because there isn't a health and safety basis for imposing such long setbacks, it is in violation of the state statutes. The state statutes specifically says municipal entities can regulate wind on the basis of public health and safety, and any restrictions that go beyond that clearly would be an overreach of local authority.
So in this particular instance, this ordinance passed, but is it a legal ordinance?
Well, it's legal until someone files a lawsuit, and there are several counties where lawsuits have been filed. But the efficacy of filing a lawsuit in every jurisdiction that has imposed setbacks that are beyond what the state itself uses when it regulates wind projects. Well, it's a little bit like entering into a game of whack-a-mole. enter into a lawsuit in Calumet County. Something else happens in Manitowoc County. Something happens in Trempealeau County. So this argues for a change in state policy so that we don't have this piecemeal approach to regulating wind projects.
So I suppose if you had an ordinance in Trempealeau County, for example, that says a mile away, but then if the neighboring county could put one right on the county line, they would be right next to they'd be within a mile of each other. So I guess what you're saying is we need to have something that's a little more statewide.
What we need really are permitting standards that are uniform across every jurisdiction. So a setback requirement not to exceed a certain distance, a sound output not to exceed a certain threshold, decommissioning costs that are sufficient to cover road damage and turbine removal when the project has reached the end of its operating life, but not in excess of what is necessary, that sort of thing.
I want to take up some more of the specifics with our guest, Michael Vickerman, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin, and talk about distances from a wind turbine. What is reasonable in his opinion and what isn't? And we'll be talking about that coming up as we continue here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look now at the aesthetics and environmental impacts of wind energy projects with Michael Vickerman, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin. Pleased to have him along and certainly interested in your comments, either for or against here. As we move along today, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. We'd be glad to get you on board. As we look at distances, how far, we were talking about the Trempealeau County, which was the ordinance there was, and I think it involved a mile away from any home or school or church. What's the research show on this?
We recommend, and actually the industry imposes a slightly more restrictive setback than what we think is sufficient to protect public health and safety. It's 1,000 feet, which is essentially a fifth of a mile. Certain turbine manufacturers will tell their developers a little longer distance would be advisable to make sure that the sound output never exceeds a certain threshold. It could be 45 decibels under any a set of atmospheric conditions. But as far as anything else that a turbine might produce, 1,000 feet is more than adequate for the protection of public health and safety, which is the requirement of any local body or the state to make sure that it meets that particular standard. So in Wisconsin, the first projects were some of the setbacks were less than 1,000 feet, but in general that works. The National Research Council published a study called the Environmental Impacts of Wind Turbines, and it's available online. You have to pay money to download the whole thing, but you can print out parts of it. And what they concluded a couple of things. One is that after about a half a mile, you cannot physically hear the sound. You will hear turbines occasionally under certain conditions when the windows are open. It's a light wind, but just enough to spin the blades. And there aren't any other kind of sounds in the environment that could mask it. So they are perceptible, they're audible, but are they problematic? Is it to the point where it might affect, it might cause illness or some sort of medical disorder? There is no research to indicate that that's the case.
Let's take some more calls. Grace and Chilton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm in an area where they are going to have a proposed wind farm very close to me. And Mr. Vickerman wants to know why we're spooked. I'm one of them that are spooked. Mainly because they have never had any wind turbine this size ever put up in operation in the United States. They've never been in operation. So there is no research on it. We are the guinea pigs. That's why I'm spooked. I would like to know what Mr. Vickerman thinks that he can base all this on when there have been people that have abandoned their homes because they can't stand the noise. I'd like to hear his comments on that.
Okay.
All right. For the turbines being proposed in Calumet County are standard turbines. They're about 260 feet tall, the towers, and then the blades extend another 130 feet. They're going up all over the Midwest and parts elsewhere in the United States. These are not new turbines, so there's plenty of research about their particular impacts on other communities. As far as the sound that emanates from a wind turbine, almost I would expect that every turbine that's been built is subject to either an ordinance or a permit condition that limits the amount of sound that can be measured from a neighboring residence. If that sound exceeds a certain level, that turbine can be shut down. And every manufacturer knows that the permitting power has that authority. So that is why the manufacturers tell their developers, you must maintain this amount of distance. So have any turbines in Wisconsin exceeded what they're allowed to produce? No. And if they had, they would have been shut down.
Interesting. Grace, thank you.
Buy out homes and bowl them under. Why? I want to know.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
WPPI, right in Lincoln Township, bought up homes and bowled them under because people could not even stand to live next to them.
Michael?
First of all, I was Wisconsin Public Service. The caller is referring to a 14 turbine project in Kewaunee County. Now, what WPS did, and I don't support this particular approach, but they would track calls from nearby residents, and they decided after about a year, we're just going to offer. And they narrowed the list to six residences nearby. Said, okay, if you don't like living there, we'll buy your house. And we'll buy it at a fair price. You don't have to take this offer, but if you want to, you can. This is a highly, highly irregular tactic. And WPS would now, if asked, would they do it again? They'd say no. But so two of the residences took the offer, and then the WPS I guess, demolished the house. But there are many other residents nearby who have, some of whom did not take the offer, and then there are other residents also within proximity that don't have a problem with it. It's to give you a flavor of how variable people's reactions are. There's a township in Dane County that is going to host six turbines, the same kind of turbines that the caller from Chilton called unprecedented and unresearched. This is the town of Springfield, about 7 miles northwest of Middleton, and the people who live in that area, and that's has an even higher population density than Calumet County. They reviewed the documentation from the manufacturer. There's a subdivision about a half a mile away from the project zone, and about 20 residences there. None of them have expressed an objection. And it's the same turbines built to the same specifications and setbacks and thresholds. So why is that? That's why there has to be some other motivation at play. And my belief is that it's the change in the landscape that is motivating some people to object to the technology. And the objections have to be framed as health and safety problems. But in fact, it really is they just don't want to have turbines in their view sheds. For some reason, they don't like the looks of them. But they want their local governments to support that view under the legal framework, which means pretending that shadows is a public health and safety threat.
Well, Stan in Denmark has a comment or question for you. I want to give Stan a chance. Hi, Stan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
There's also a little community called Montford. It's about 16 miles south of Dodgeville. And I'm going back maybe 25, 30 years. Last time I was down there was this fall. I take two trips down that way every year. And they've got about 20 turbines there. And they're right by dairy farms. There's dairy cattle right by them. I have yet to see one of their feet up in the air. I talked to people there. They don't have a problem with them. In fact, we went down to St. Louis, and I've seen something I wish I could get. In Illinois, a private farm had a turbine windmill for their own use, and it was about the size of the regular old-fashioned windmills you used to find on the farms.
Mm-hmm.
And I live out in the country, and I would love to put one in. And what people don't realize, you get paid for having those on your property. And the wind's free, and as far as wind goes, this was a few years ago, they did a study that Green Bay is actually windier than Chicago. Mm-hmm.
No, well, thanks for calling, Stan. Comment from you, Michael.
Yeah, the Montfort Wind Project's been operating since 2001, and it is a flat-out success story. Not one grievance or sideways comment. People are happy to have the turbines as neighbors. There are 20 turbines in this installation. They run along Highway 18. They're highly visible from that road, and this is a source of pride for the community. So when you hear people objecting to the idea of placing wind in Wisconsin, they are completely ignoring the Montfort experience.
Interesting. Shirley in Prentice, it's your turn. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, thank you. I'm pretty enthusiastic about these wind turbines, but I wonder, do they or do they not harm birds? And if they do, are any design changes considered?
Mm-hmm. All right.
turbines have a negligible impact overall on bird populations. After the Kewaunee County wind turbines were commissioned, the utilities were required to do a two-year avian monitoring study. And basically that involved graduate students walking around the turbine base and looking for any sign of a dead bird and trying to figure out why that dead bird wound up there so close to a turbine. Well, they've averaged out the total casualty count, and it amounts to essentially two birds per megawatt per year. So we're talking about 50 birds a year. This is not going to threaten the population of resident or migrating birds that go through that part of the state. Where there is a development in California that has been problematic for birds, and it's largely because of the habitat that the turbines are placed within. It's ranch land with an abundant supply of ground prey, ground squirrels, that attract raptors. And raptors fly very differently than waterfowl, for example, or migrating songbirds. Now, we would caution against any developer that's looking to place turbines in known habitat for raptors. The sensitivity there is because of their feeding patterns, they have a greater susceptibility to colliding with a turbine than other birds. In Wisconsin, this is not going to be a problem because the turbines are going to be placed on cultivated land, and that's just generally not particularly suitable habitat for raptors. So basically, in Wisconsin, wind development has a clean bill of health from an avian perspective.
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking, and you brought a map in, so I'm looking over at the power plant in Madison and thinking of coal-fired plants and so forth. In the long run, the way we have traditionally used electric oil and coal and so forth to heat, I would think might have more impact on bird life than something like the wind turbine.
Well, transmission lines do. If you count the leading causes of bird collisions and casualties, start with buildings, work your way through transmission or power lines, vertical obstructions really of any kind. Now, there aren't that many turbines in the United States, but if you run this the statistics, the wind turbines in the United States installed capacity has contributed something like 5/10,000ths of a percentage point of bird deaths. If you want to look for culprits, start with your house cat, if you let that house cat outside. Cars and cats they kill birds by the millions. So compare that with the 10,000 birds that might have that died at the hands of wind turbines, and we're talking several orders of magnitude difference.
Remember being on a long, essentially a 500-mile bike ride over several days, and what amazed me was the number of birds that I saw along the roadside that must have been hit by cars. Riding a bike along at slow speed, you mm-hmm. really notice that sort of thing. Shirley, thanks. Glenn in Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Michael. This is Glenn Stoddard. Michael and I have debated this issue a bit. I'm a lawyer based in Eau Claire now, and I represent a lot of people around the state who are very concerned about the adverse health and safety effects and environmental effects of these large wind energy facilities that Michael's promoting. A couple of points I'd like to make, and he can certainly respond to these, and I'm sure he will. First of all, as I'm sure Michael will admit, he's not a lawyer, and so his comments about what's legal and what's not with regard to ordinances like the Trumbull County ordinance have to be taken with that in mind. And I disagree with him on the law regarding that. Also, I think it's important to point out that Renew, and maybe this was pointed out earlier and I didn't hear it, but Renew, the organization that Michael's representing, is I think heavily supported by funding from utilities and wind energy developers. So, you know, that should be taken into consideration here, too. Let me just address a couple of these issues. First of all, the National Research Council study report that Michael referenced is a very good resource on this. It's many, many pages long and provides a lot of information. It does not give wind energy a clean bill of health when it comes to public health and safety or environmental impacts. It indicates that there are a lot of adverse impacts, and there's a lot more study that needs to be done on these issues. Also, with regard to setbacks, Mr. Vickerman is advocating a 1,000-foot setback and arguing that that's safe for the public. That's an arbitrary number that was pulled out of the air by the industry so that it could site turbines in as many places as possible. What's resulting around the country, and actually in Europe and in Canada, is that when turbines are put that close to human residences, they tend to drive people out of their homes, and we saw that in Kewaunee County, and they cause health and safety problems, including stress, sleep disorders, anxiety, a lot of problems that are now being documented through studies that are being conducted as we speak and that are starting to come out. There's low-frequency sound that comes from these turbines that is hard to measure, but that really causes severe problems for many people. There's also shadow flicker. There's ice throws. There's mechanical failures and a number of things. Many of my clients would support wind energy if it was sited properly, meaning far enough away from residences. The problem in Wisconsin is that we have a lot of rural development all around the state. Finding locations where wind energy facilities can be safely developed is really difficult. So what the industry is trying to do, and I think Michael is promoting this idea, is to try to take away local governmental authority to regulate so that these things can be placed very close to human residences. And what happens with that puts people in the position of having to hire a lawyer, like some of my clients did in Kewaunee County, to sue the company to either address the problem or to compensate them for moving or for some sort of an easement or whatever. This is really a question of location. You know, as they say in real estate, location, location, location. Well, if the wind energy companies were really being honest, they would admit that these do cause problems, and they should be at least a mile to a mile and a half away from residences.
You know what? I'm going to break in here, Glenn, because we're almost to the end of the show, and you've raised a number of issues, and I want to give Michael a chance to respond. I think you were probably getting close to the end of your comments anyway. Michael?
Certainly. I want to correct one thing right off the bat. Wind turbines do not throw ice. It is physically impossible for them to throw ice. They can shed ice, but as soon as ice forms on the blade, the aerodynamic relationship changes to the point where the blades can't provide any lift anymore. And without lift, the blades don't spin. So the ice sits there until it melts, and that's that. As far as, sorry, I'm starting to lose my voice here. As far as the relationship of the industry and local governments, 10 years ago, the state of Wisconsin regulated all power generation projects down to 12 megawatts. 12 megawatts would be the equivalent of about 8 turbines now. And then in 1998, it raised that threshold from 12 megawatts to 100 megawatts. Essentially, that placed on the plate of counties and towns the responsibility of siting projects that it never had the authority to do before the law was changed. If the law the law is not immutable, it can be and I hope will be amended so that there's greater uniformity in these standards. But there's nothing magic about the current threshold. It was 100 megawatts. That wasn't the number 10 years ago. It is now. And then finally, if we accept the idea of a 1 mile setback from the nearest house to the nearest school, we basically say to this to the people of Wisconsin, we're not going to accept wind turbines anywhere in the state. There are very few locations that meet that criteria. Considering that it is state policy to support an increase in renewable generation in order to wean ourselves off of fossil fuel generation, it would require the state to become utterly dependent on wind energy imports from other states.
And Michael, with that, we have to close. Thank you very much. Michael Vickerman, our guest, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.